Stay tuned now for Edward R. Murrow with the news, presented by Hams, the beer refreshing. Hams is the beer that looks refreshing. Dancing gold in your glass. Tastes refreshing. Crisp and clean cut with smoothness aged in. Yes, Hams is the beer that captures for you the refreshing enchantment of the land it comes from. The land of sky blue waters. When you're dry and thirsty, ask for Hams. H-A-M-M-S. Hams. Refreshingly yours from the land of sky blue waters. Edward R. Murrow is now in Europe for an on-the-spot survey of the leading capitals and interviews with the men and women who make the news. In a few minutes, we will hear Mr. Murrow's report. But first, here's Bill Shadell with a summary of the news.
Good evening. Over the atomic testing grounds in Nevada, a low-flying plane today launched the fourth atomic bomb, the most powerful yet of a series, and the one most anxiously awaited. For this was in conjunction with troop maneuvers. More than 1,000 paratroopers were dug in along the so-called front line, 6 to 10 miles from the center of the blast. There were no injuries, although some 75 miles away in Las Vegas, windows were shattered as in last winter's tests. The scientists and official observers will now be evaluating the effects of radiation on various pieces of military equipment, such as tanks, artillery, and items of clothing. From official sources in London today, it's reported that Prime Minister Churchill has ordered a speed-up in Britain's atomic energy program in hopes of exploding one of its own test bombs within 6 months' time. Two of the nation's atomic scientists in Chicago said today the United States and Russia are approaching a point of no return in the race to build huge stockpiles of A-bombs and proposed a vigorous exploration of new ideas for possible agreement with the Soviet Union. Averil Harriman, the new administrator of foreign aid, left for London today for talks with Britain's new government leaders. He said he was ready to consider any proposals to help Britain meet the heavier economic pressures brought on by rearmament. Herbert Morrison, the Labour Party's former foreign minister, asked for an intelligent, alert, vigorous, fighting opposition to the Conservatives, but no irresponsible and haywire tactics. Egypt's Minister of the Interior charged today that the British had cut off delivery of fuel oil from the Suez Canal to Cairo, and that the step may lead to revolution. In an effort to break the boycott of native labor, British tank forces herded Arab workers from their villages into army camps as the Egyptian underground threatened to take stringent measures against civilians helping to supply British troops. In Casablanca, the Arab quarter was put under military guard tonight after clashes between Moroccan nationalists and police, in which 3 Moroccans were killed. In Korea, the comparative lull on the battlefront continues over another day as ceasefire negotiators reach general agreement over an armistice line in the eastern part of the peninsula, but still find the western part of the line in stubborn dispute. Both sides insist on holding Kaesong, the gateway to Seoul. Communist news sources say they won't give in on this point. But should there be a compromise, an Allied spokesman warns that agreement on a buffer zone between the two armies is only the first step. There are 3 other major problems, and there's a possibility that the war will go on for a long time. The winter cold, with snow and rain settling over the front, reduced air activity today, although there was 1 brief engagement between 24 American jets and 40 Red planes. No damage reported to either side. Official Washington had its close-up today of Britain's Princess Elizabeth and her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh, as the royal couple shook the hands of an estimated 1,500 guests at the British Embassy reception. The couple's schedule today included a visit to Mount Vernon and Arlington Cemetery, a diplomatic reception at the Canadian Embassy. Tonight, a small but formal dinner for the Trumans. The new chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Frank McKinney, got President Truman's approval today of a plan to put the collectors of internal revenue under civil service. The White House announced that the president would recommend this to Congress in January. The Office of Price Stabilization today ordered slaughterhouses to set aside a certain percentage of beef for the armed services. Officials say the new order, however, is not expected to disrupt civilian supply of meat. The services want to buy 56 million pounds for immediate use and to build up reserve supplies. The shipping strike here in the East appears no nearer solution tonight as state mediators give up their attempt to settle the bitter dispute. They have now turned the problem over to a fact-finding panel. Well, Mr. Murrow is again in Paris tonight. So we'll switch there now. Edward R. Murrow recording.
General Eisenhower is flying to the States tomorrow night. The purpose of the visit is for conferences with President Truman. There may be a news conference at the White House. General Eisenhower's visit is not connected with any military emergency over here. Secretary of State Acheson, Ambassador Austin, and other members of our delegation to the United Nations arrived here in Paris today. They expressed hope for a fruitful meeting and for peace in Korea. For the past 2 weeks, in London and Paris, I have been asking questions about anti-Americanism. How much are we disliked and why? This is an effort to sum up what I have been told. Some of my informants are world famous, others completely unknown. There is not a great deal of anti-Americanism in the accepted sense. That is, we are not disliked because we are rich and most of these people are poor. We are no longer widely regarded as completely uncultured, uncouth, and materialistic. There is a wide and deep appreciation of what American aid has meant amongst those people who know or care about their own governments. Several friends have said, you put your question in the wrong way. If you were to ask, is there apprehension about future American policy, that would be easier to answer. They maintain that doubt or disagreement about our policy could not fairly be called anti-Americanism. But there is great and perhaps growing apprehension about our policy. There is the feeling in Britain that we tried to support the Iranians and the British at the same time, and that we have urged the British to undertake an armaments program beyond their economic capacity. In France, it is said, particularly in conservative and military quarters, that we are encouraging Arab nationalism, particularly in Morocco. And that doesn't make sense, even from a military point of view, when we are building huge bases there. But these are merely surface indications of displeasure with our policy. Both the British and the French are having to make a major psychological adjustment. The French recovering from a humiliating military defeat and occupation. The British recognizing that they are no longer a first-rate power and are increasingly dependent upon America for survival. But the real source of apprehension about our country has to do not with the present or the past. It is a real and abiding fear about the future. The fear may be wholly imaginary and unjustified. But it is here, and it is this. What will we do with our tremendous military might when we have acquired it? Every bellicose speech in Washington, every reference to a policy based solely upon power, every reference to an eventual ultimatum to Russia, serves to increase the fear that once we get that military might, we will demand a showdown, which we might win, but which would destroy utterly these two countries, regardless of the outcome. A distinguished and experienced Frenchman said to me the other day, your policy is that when you achieve a dominant and superior position over the Russians, they will be willing to negotiate. But he said, dominant and superior nations do not negotiate. They never have. They don't need to. An American military officer, experienced, level-headed, and unemotional, told me that in the last couple of weeks, he had seen Belgian, Dutch, and Danes, friends of the house, as he put it, on our side, completely committed to vote or fight with us. And they were also fearful that we would not stand steady when we have acquired great and perhaps overwhelming military might, that we would attempt to force a quick decision. Not through an open and overt preventive war, but by creating conditions or making demands which would force the Russians to take the final and desperate gamble. Many of the people with whom I have talked have risked their lives in one or two wars, are prepared to do it again. Their physical courage and their devotion to democratic institutions and individual freedom are not to be questioned. And yet, they are apprehensive about our future policy. I have talked with no one in public or private life who does not share this apprehension in some degree. The feeling, the suspicion, that we may use our strength, when we get it, in such fashion that the destruction of their nations will be ensured, although that was in no sense our intention. The rearmament programs of both Britain and France are straining their economies to the breaking point. They fully appreciate the need for strength. But the urge for national survival is strong. And they know or feel that they could not survive another war, regardless of the outcome. This attitude is to be in no sense confused with defeatism or neutralism. It is a fear that we won't have the patience, won't recognize that this may be a situation where there is no quick or final solution. There is no disposition to doubt that we can produce the fighting gear we talk about. No tendency to underrate our power. But there is always the recognition that we wield that power from such a great and relatively safe distance. This doubt about our ultimate intention, this widespread apprehension about our basic responsibility, is one of the most profoundly disturbing things this reporter has encountered in many years of reporting from Europe. I am told that in both France and Britain, there are many politically unsophisticated people, thoroughly anti-communist, who have come to believe that we, the United States, are a greater threat to the peace than the Soviet Union. This is misconception multiplied. But we have permitted the communists to capture the slogan of peace. The posture of some of our officials has been distinctly threatening. The more extreme and bellicose utterances of some of our less responsible politicians and organs of opinion have been hay in the barn for communist propagandists over here. We have failed to convince many of our friends that we shall use our power, when we get it, with wisdom, patience, and with due regard to the exposed position in which our allies find themselves. They do not doubt our potential power, but they require additional assurance that we will not abuse or recklessly use that power. This is Ed Murrow recording in Paris. I'll be back in a moment with the word for today.
Now it's November in the land of sky blue waters, an exhilarating month when the days are bright and brisk, when glittering stars seem brighter than ever in the clear, frosty night air. And it's here, in this bracing land of unparalleled refreshment, that Hams, the most refreshing beer in all the land, is brewed for you. Hams is the beer that captures in each golden drop the refreshing zest of the land where it's brewed, the magic land of sky blue waters. You see it in the glowing autumn gold of a glass of Hams beer, and it's yours to enjoy in the crisp, clean-cut taste with smoothness aged in, the taste that sets Hams apart from other fine beers, a wonderful flavor right out of the Northland. Sound good? Sound extra refreshing? Then why not see for yourself? Pour a frosty glass of Hams beer and discover what real refreshment is. Ask for Hams wherever fine beer is sold. Refreshingly yours from the land of sky blue waters. And now, Ed, what's the word for today?
We were speaking of Western Europe's fears about our future policy. These are not based upon fact. But as Emerson remarked, no anchor, no cable, no fences avail to keep a fact a fact. As our power increases, and our responsibilities too, we might remember the words of Lord Acton, who said, "All power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." Good night, and good luck.
Tune in again tomorrow night for Edward R. Murrow and the News, brought to you by the Ham Brewing Company of St. Paul, Minnesota. Tonight, reach for a bottle of Ham's beer, the beer with the crisp, clean-cut flavor all its own. It's truly America's most refreshing beer, from the land of sky blue waters, enchanted land of cool refreshment. Ask for Ham's beer tonight. Listen tomorrow, tomorrow. Fahey Flynn speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.